The following presentation was recorded at a Christian Light Education workshop. More information at clp.org.
Teacher ties with parents. How is the culture here with parents' involvement with teachers? Do you have teachers visit your classroom at least once a week? Parents visiting the classroom. Maybe I didn't say that right. Parents visiting the classroom once a week, once a month. Are y'all scared of each other? You do it once a month, okay?
Parents visit at least once a school year.
Once a school year. Okay, that's good. It does vary with culture. I had a former student that went to Pennsylvania to teach, and as everything in Pennsylvania is, it's big business up there. Parents come routinely. They have two chairs in the back of the room, and they have a guest book that the parents sign, and each student has a profile page that the parent can page through this while they're in the classroom. So that's probably as much of involvement as I have ran into. The school where I'm at, the culture is maybe all the parents wouldn't visit once a year, so it wouldn't be as significant as your all's. I teach high school. I'm probably involved with about 25 different sets of parents. I have 36 students, and I probably won't get a third of them to visit during the year. So it does vary. How do you feel about this? Do you want them to visit? Do you want their input? You wish they would visit more? That's great. Because the parents do play an important role in your classroom. Just a little side note. I asked the teachers there where I teach. I said, what do I tell the teachers in this session? And the one teacher that's almost taught as long as I have, taught about 23 years, she said to tell them that if they want respect of parents, they need to teach 10 years. So have you got respect? How many of you taught 10 years? Do you have respect? Have you felt that? Do you remember coming in as the beginner and maybe the apprehension of having to talk to a parent about a problem? I probably have got some parents in here too. How many people are just parents or have school children? Because some of my comments will be directed towards that. And this is one of them. As a parent, when you're coming into the classroom, this 18 or 19-year-old teacher, they're a little apprehensive about relating to a dad that's 40, 45. Keep that in mind. Make the communication comfortable for them. Don't belittle them or look down or condescending to them. So what role can the parent play? I mentioned that parents can play an important role. How do parents participate in your actual class? Do you have any of them do art, music, anything like that? Do they come in and help with projects? We've got some head shaking over here. Do y'all have a devotions brought in by a dad or something? Is that something where parents participate? We have that in our school. Bring in lunches. Most schools do that. There are ways where the parent can become involved, and I think it's important. You may think of that as just them serving lunch. But when they come inside that school door, their eyes are open to what's going on there. And we need to cultivate that. And some of my comments are going to be directed toward that. Cultivating the relationship just by exposing the parent to what's going on at school. Parents have a tendency to get busy and kind of forget their children in school. I have a list of things here on your handout that why we seek out parents' involvement or what role the parent can play. The first one I have here is academic ways in which they can help. Examples of how family can help a student and also the school environment. The first one I've got is encourage reading. Now, most of us know that studies show that if you have read to your child before he comes to school, that he will perform better. I'm not saying that. I don't think studies say that will make them an A student, but they will perform at a higher level. But also, if you have a child that doesn't like to read, typically this is the young man, I want you to encourage reading. And what I found from my own experience as a parent, I've been on both sides of this field, that those that don't like to read, it's often because reading is hard. They really have to struggle to read the words, to comprehend. So if you have a child with that don't like to read, get them books that are several grades below their level that they should be. What you want to do is cultivate in them a love of reading. Maybe that's a little overstated, but at least they can learn to read for enjoyment. Give them books that are below grade level. As they read, the more they read, the closer they will come to their grade level with their reading. I would encourage parents and teachers to keep that in mind. Support education and learning. I know that in most settings, this can be a controversial question. What is enough education? How serious should we take education? How much time do we put in it? And because that varies, then the child is somewhat a result of that. If a parent supports learning, notice I said supports learning. I didn't say supports higher education. But if the parent can just support learning and education, that will be a tremendous help to the classroom. Talk with your children around the supper table, around the breakfast table. Dialogue. Help them express themselves. Once again, it helps in the classroom. D, provide a routine that allows time for homework. I've noticed on this trip that homework can be a controversial subject between parents and teachers. So we'll touch on a little more later. But notice my statement here. Provide a routine that allows time for homework. Where I'm coming from there is don't ask them 5 minutes before they go to bed, do you have homework? And they have some huge test the next day or some 500-word report to write. Routinely work this into your schedule, homework. Communicate regularly with school personnel. The reason I've got this on here is if you relate with personnel, you are conveying to your child that school is important. And it's going back to the thing of saying education is important. Take it serious. So if parents can interact with personnel, goes along also with F here, participate in school functions. I don't know what options you all have. We have school picnics, field trips where we invite parents along. If the parent is there, then they're conveying to their child, education is important, learning is important. Should translate into them trying harder. Teach respect for authority. We all know that a child that comes out of a home that knows to respect authority is a big asset in the classroom. The next one, show an interest in children's academic growth. I know a lady, she's about 60 years old. She reflects back on her school years. And she says, I would bring my report card home, and I would have C's, maybe a B occasionally. And my mom or dad would say, oh, that's about what I made. That's good enough. And so she began to think of herself as a C, D, sometimes B student. She didn't apply herself. Her parents had communicated to her that that's okay. That's your level. That's where I was at. That lady now looks back and said, if my parents would have showed some interest, I might not have become an A student, but my education would have been a lot more beneficial to me because I would have thought I could. And that kind of goes along with the next one too. Believe that the children's effort will affect their grade, that if they apply themselves, they will achieve a higher level. Not 100%, not all A's, but they will achieve a higher level. Communicate that to your child. So families do not necessarily determine the student's success in school, but they do play a huge part in their achievement. My next question then is, how can a teacher connect with parents? And I don't know. There's a school in our area that has a newsletter that they send home. I think it goes with the report card. And this newsletter tells what happened in the past term, maybe what they're anticipating to do in the next term. What we're doing here is we're giving opportunity for the parent, that busy parent, or that one that maybe doesn't really want to take an interest in school. But if their child comes home with this and is excited about it, I believe that parents could get a little excited too. We're trying to cultivate that relationship, and it comes through communication. You're going to find out a good bit in what I'm saying, communication. As teachers, try to find ways to communicate to the parent. If you do call a parent, what's the most likely reason for it? Because they scored better than they usually do, or because you need some help with behavior? So the parent gets the phone call, and what are they expecting the teacher to say? Johnny just didn't behave today. It's been going on for a couple weeks now. I'm going to need some help. Or do you call home and say, you know, Johnny scored a 90 today. He must have really worked a little better on his studying last night. And what have you got? You got a happy student. You got a happy parent. And teachers are smiling from ear to ear. Communicate with the parents. Communicate the positive. Don't let that positive fall through the cracks. Communicate with your parents. We are trying to open a channel for the parent to become aware of the school. And through that, a relationship in which the child and the teacher and the parent can connect, they'll create an environment in which the child will do better in the classroom. Now, there are some stumbling blocks to parent involvement. I think it would be helpful if the teachers are aware of this. Education does intimidate some parents. It can be because they had a bad experience when they were in school. They struggled. And so education scares them. It can be the culture that education isn't important. And so they kind of back off. And also, you know, teachers are teachers because they're smart. Is that right? And so the parent can feel a little intimidated by this smart teacher. So these are some roadblocks that can be in the way. But there's also the potential for there to be a setting where the parent always felt that school was over here. I send my child to school. The home is over here. And the two aren't supposed to mix. There's some cultures that have it that way. And I'm seeing that break down, though. I think more and more I'm seeing parents recognizing the need to become involved. But you may have a parent that's from that setting, from that culture. And so they're not aware they can help because it's just not, they haven't thought about that. So this communication can open that. Some parents don't think they're capable of helping. You know, you think that a parent could at least help a first, second, or third grader, right? But I'm going to maybe tell on myself, I don't know, but when I went to school, phonics wasn't part of it. And I think even parents that had phonics, they've been a long enough time since they've studied it or used it, that to sit down with their little first grader or second grader and have to explain how to do the phonics to sound out this word can be a little awkward. And math, anybody can help a second grader through math, right? Or a third grader until they have to do a fraction. Maybe Canadians can do fractions. I'm not sure. In the States, I have students look at an algebra problem this long. And if it doesn't have a fraction in it, they'll take that thing and work on it. But it has a fraction in it, they push the panic button. They start to say, I can't do this. Fractions scare people, in the States anyway. And then, once again, what I'm saying is that parent, having to sit down and show their child how to reduce a fraction or how to divide, it can be intimidating. And as I've got here, anybody that can explain grammar, I envy them. I teach, but grammar's not my specialty when it comes to explaining all the rules that are there. Teachers, I want you to understand that parents can feel intimidated even by their little first and second grader and trying to help. So look for these signs. Ultimately, what we're saying is the parent will feel inferior to their child. That's where I'm coming from. Parents can feel inferior to their child because they don't understand. Because they feel they can't help. They're a little challenged with the different concepts. And so they can feel intimidated and feel that inferior. And parents don't want to be put in that place. So try to prevent it from happening. And we'll look at some ways possibly that can happen. So we need to look at our parents and determine what they will be able to do, what they're capable of. And teachers, do respect the fact that parents do have busy schedules. It does. The day of a parent gets very full. And so we need to recognize that. I'm saying that for a teacher to expect routine, regular parent involvement with their child is expecting too much, unless that child struggles and by some special arrangement the parent has consented to do it. But just to continually send homework home and then wonder why the parents ain't seeing that it gets done, from my experience, is relating to, I teach high school, but I've been principal about half of my 25 years, and so I've related to 1 through 8, and I see this frustration in teachers. Why is the homework coming back incomplete? And I try to help them see the parent side of it. We need to think of the parents in this. They do have busy schedules, and yes, homework is part of life. But I know that's controversial in some circles. I know some parents think, okay, get it done at school. They shouldn't have to do anything at home. All right, so we recognize parents do have time restraints. Recognize that they have different abilities and different desires to help their student, their child. And then point E here, help parents recognize that they can help without having book knowledge. I want you to go back and look at the list of things A through I that I have on there. Encourage reading, support learning and education, talk with their children, provide a routine that allows time for homework, communicate with personnel, participate in functions, teach respect for authority, show an interest in their academic growth. How many of them require book knowledge? I don't think any of them do. And yet that whole list will be a big help in your classroom if parents can do that. So the challenge, I think, for you as teachers is to recognize what the parent can do in your classroom to create that positive attitude and create a routine that allows for homework, participate in school. Encourage your parents to do that and get that communication open. Now, the homework side of it, as a curriculum developer, the exercises in the textbook or the World Light Unit or whatever you're using, at least from CLE's perspective, are there to teach, not to grade. You have a concept, and for them to understand it, they need to process it and use it in application. The exercises are there for the student to learn how to apply the concept. So it's a teaching tool, not something to evaluate. You evaluate through quizzes and tests. CLE does not recommend that you score homework or exercises because their purpose is to teach, not to evaluate a score. It's to teach. It's to apply the principle, learn how to apply the principle, and then test time, quiz time, then you see if they've learned it. I know that some schools do use daily grades on their classwork. And if you do, I would suggest that you weight it in a way that it doesn't have a large impact on the report card. I think there is place to give some significance so they will apply themselves. We want students to apply themselves with that work. And so in our school, we grade on effort, not what they scored. Whether you can see that they put time into it and tried, then they get credit. And then you test and graduate for the score on it, for the report card from the test. Now, this thing of parents helping students. Do y'all respect universities of the states? I got some data here from the University of Texas and Duke. They took 30 years of data and analyzed it, and they concluded that parents helping their child with homework did not translate into any higher achievement on standardized tests. And I think if we stop and look at that, we can understand why. Johnny brings the math problem to dad or mom. She's in the middle of doing something. Does she teach the child to step through it, or does she give the child the answer? There's very little learning going on in the busy home because the parent does the work. In fact, they have a name for it, learned helplessness syndrome. What that means is the child trains the parent that if I come and ask, I'm really just want the answer, and I'll go back, I'll quit bugging you, and you can get back to your work. They train the parent to do their work for them. And then classroom teachers, that can happen there too. You can have those that continually ask, and you have to discern whether they really need help or they just need to say, okay, you can do it. I'm not going to help you on this one. But coming back to the homework, what I'm getting at is, my statement in the beginning said to provide a routine that allows for homework. It didn't say provide help for homework. So this may cause, I brought in the aspect of whether to grade homework or not. What I'm saying here is, you will be much better off if that child doesn't get help from their parent. Because you don't know when mom gave the answer or when she just helped them get the answer. If you want to evaluate whether, if you're going to use the exercises to evaluate, do they know the concept, you want to see their struggles and failures. And so you don't want the parent giving those answers. Now, I had someone ask me, said, well, you know, I used to teach school and I like to help my child with their math. I said, well, you've got the credentials to do it. You enjoy it, you're going to take the time. That's fine. I'm not saying parents can help, but if they do help, it should be in a way that does teach, which is not as likely to happen in most homes because of schedules. But you do want to provide a routine where the child has time to do that homework, or at least try to do that homework. Teachers want this child to try. That's what we have to do to grow. How much homework is another question, though, and that's where the controversy usually comes in. I think teachers need to respect parents' schedules in this. Maybe their day got disrupted and the child didn't have enough time in school to work on it. Go ahead and cut the load back a little bit and keep that in mind, the time restraint. Homework should be limited. It's a child that takes homework every evening, there's an issue there that homework's not going to fix. You have a learning disability more than likely, and we'll talk about those more later. So we have different type situations ongoing. And so, as we go through this, working with parents, homework, academics, if you have that child that is struggling, I would encourage you to contact the parent, develop communication there. And I say call the parent and set up a meeting. If you have an issue here to work through, don't shy away from the face-to-face. If you have a child that's struggling, sit down with the parents and develop a plan. What you're going to do, what they want you to do, how much they'll support you. You need your parents' support in these things. So I think it's important, if there is a learning disability or they are challenged, that you talk to the parents and develop some approach to it, because what can happen is it develops into a real issue, and where you have parents making statements that don't support the teacher, or the teacher's criticizing the parents for not helping. It just breaks down. So have that meeting, develop a plan. From then on, I think you can communicate with phone calls or notes home. Unless it's not working and then you have to go further, then I would suggest, again, a face-to-face. At Christian Light, we do a lot of communication through email, even in-house. We have, you know, I have about 20 people under me, and so we just communicate through email. However, if I have something that I want to talk to them about, it's serious, I don't send an email with a smiley face after trying to make it smooth. That smiley face is not going to smooth it out. Go talk to them. I go talk to them. I'm encouraging you not to be afraid of that face-to-face talk. You need it. The other area in which parents and teachers need to develop relationship is when there's behavior problems. This is a tough one. One at schools, in my experience anyway, some years will go good. Some years are terrible. But if you've taught very long, you probably had that child that doesn't behave very well, and you're continually battling, trying to get control. So I've got a question. How big a role can the parent play in the behavior of their child in your classroom? Home training makes a huge difference. I mentioned this earlier. Teachers can tell if a child has come from a home that has taught respect for authority. Parental support for the teacher is critical also. Both of these are fundamental to controlling the classroom. But teachers, you cannot expect the parent to keep control of your classroom. You're there. You're in charge. I've had teachers that say they have a problem and they think it's because the parents aren't teaching well enough or supporting them strong enough. And it could be part of it, but ultimately the classroom is yours to control. If you expect the parent to keep the control in your classroom, you're going to be disappointed. You're in charge. Teachers, we'll look at a section here about helping you understand parents. Let's say a behavior problem starts, and you call the parent. And you and the parent talk about it, and you develop a plan. You decide the punishment, or the parents talk to the child. Goes on, probably improves for a little bit, but it breaks down again, and you call the parents a second time. The second time, the parents and you probably agree to maybe a little stronger discipline, lay out another plan. But what can happen is sometimes it continues. As principal, when I've been in these situations, I have found that typically the third call is not worth making. I explain why. The parent is saying, I talked to the teacher. I told her to take care of it. I gave her permission to punish. Why isn't she doing it? That's what the parents typically think. And teachers, what are you all thinking? If the parent was supporting me, this would stop, right? Is that what you're thinking? We've got two frustrated parties, and Johnny in the middle. So when we have this situation where we just can't get on top of it, and we have had parent and teacher consultations back and forth, I think we need to look for a deeper reason for the misbehavior. I've got a couple reasons here. I've seen children come out of good homes and be a problem in school. And I think peer pressure can be part of it. They can get a group of... I'm so tempted to always say young men. Sometimes it can be young ladies. But it can be a behavior problem. You get a group, and none of them are strong enough to stand up and say, whoa, we shouldn't be doing this. They just kind of follow along. So you've got peer pressure that's causing this scenario. Another one is a cover-up for weak academics. The child is making failing grades or very poor grades. That's embarrassing. But if he can be create a little disturbance in the class, he can almost become this macho image to his peers. And that takes attention away from his grades. So the behavior is a cover-up. You've got a deeper issue, don't you? And sometimes there's trouble at home. The child just comes to school tense, confused in their mind, and it just plays out into misbehavior. Sad, but it happens sometimes. Now, when you have these situations, you don't want the parents and the teacher, in what I talked about earlier, frustrated with each other, because you're not going to help the situation. So we need to create communication again, maybe with a third party, and I'll get into that later. But this, what typically happens here is you have a frustrated parent, frustrated teacher, but you're not getting to the root of the problem. Another angle that can occur sometimes is teachers can sometimes struggle with discipline. Some teachers are just not naturally inclined to keep control of their classroom. I've encountered this. It can be a real challenge for a principal or a school board to have a perfectly great young person in the classroom. Morally, ethically, they're outstanding character. But in the classroom, it's chaos. And it's because I think they don't have that intuition to automatically give the right punishment or to respond, react. They also facilitate. I found that those that are weak with discipline will one day overreact. I got to get a hold of this. I'll do a strong punishment. But because they have a weaker mentality, attitude toward this, they can't hold it. And so the next day, they let it slide. And where's the student in this? They're confused. Teacher's trying, and one day, like I say, they'll hammer it, hit it hard. But they're just not. That's just not the way they're made. And so they can't maintain that level. So they've overreacted and then underreacted. They can't find that middle of the road. The reason I'm bringing this out is because it creates tension between parents and teachers. Even parents that want to support teachers can be put on the spot in this situation. They can. You know, when I sat down to make this, get this ready, I'm thinking, you know, what do I tell people? You know, what's important? How can I be on target? And I bring out some things like this, and I'm thinking, well, you know, maybe y'all don't have this problem. What I've found so far is, I even had one say, did you talk to somebody from our area? So maybe this isn't your area, but I'm putting it out there. It does happen. It can happen. It can create a very tense situation for all parties involved. We'll look at this a little later if I have time here. Actually, I'm just going to start through it right now. Let's look at a crisis situation. The child's version of the event goes home. Why did I say the child's version? It's slightly embellished, isn't it? Or just certain things are told. And the parents aren't sure what to believe. Now, we as teachers can sometimes wonder, why does a parent even consider what the child's saying without contacting me? We as teachers can have that automatic reaction. Why did they even consider their child's side. Teachers, I want you to realize what it's like to be a parent if you're not. You love your children. You've tried to train them to tell the truth. You don't want to think your child a lie. So you got to work through that. Keep that in mind. Because if it comes to it and you have to talk to the parent, if you can understand why the parent had those thoughts, rather than having the thought, why in the world did you believe me? Why did you believe your child? If you come into these discussions with that attitude, it's going to be a stumbling block you've got to overcome. Let's overcome it before we get there. Let's realize why a parent believes the child. It's because they love the child. They've tried to train the child. They don't want to think their child will lie. And so the parents can be put in an awkward position because of this. But let's say this is a parent that follows the proper rules, and so they call the teacher to find out what really did happen. That's what parents should do, and some parents do. Some of them drag it out a little bit. Some of them never get around to it. It should be done, but it can lead to two things. Either they talk to the teacher and they find out the real story, and they find out that their child did embellish it or not tell the whole thing. Or they can be put in a position where they don't really agree with what the teacher did. You got two possibilities here. Now, in the first situation, if they discover that their little boy or girl didn't quite tell the truth, they can confront the child with their dishonesty and deal with it at that level. And that will take care of those situations. In most cases, I've found that they do. But teachers aren't infallible, and sometimes they do make decisions that parents cannot support. It's a struggle for a parent to support. So what's the parent supposed to do? Can they tell the child the teacher was fair even if they felt differently? This would feel somewhat dishonest, wouldn't it? As a parent, teachers, I'm challenging you to think about it. If the parent is struggling a little bit with seeing your side, if they go home and tell their child they agree 100% with the teacher when they're not, it's kind of an untruth. Now, my very first work session I had with this presentation, I talked with a teacher later that had an issue with a parent. This parent had supported the teacher 100%, and not conveyed to the child in any way that they saw some of the issue and could understand. The child could not understand why their parents couldn't see their point. Now, this is kind of a extreme, but this young man went on to leave the church. And this father said, and he's looked back, that episode broke down his relationship with his child. That's sobering. What's a parent supposed to do? That, like I said, that's extreme. But once again, I'm saying, teachers, look at it from the parent's side. So let's take another look, another option. The parent says, I can see your point. The teacher didn't quite call it like I would have. But life isn't always fair. And if you learn that, you'll get along better in life. You need to obey your teacher. Respect the authority there. Does that solve the problem? Typically, I think most of us would say, if you can't agree with the teacher, this is how you should talk to your child about it. Relate to them. But there's something here I'd like for us to step back and look at another aspect. Where is the child in this? Where is the child's relationship with the teacher? That child can go to school and obey the teacher because my parents said I had to. But do you teachers like being put in that position because they're obeying you simply because their parents told them to? The parent has said, I can't quite see the teacher's side. You've broken a relationship there that's critical to having a environment in the classroom that's not tense. So I've kind of put myself in a corner here, haven't I? I've given about three different situations to this, And so what is a parent and a teacher supposed to do when it comes to this? A controversy in which the parent does not support the teacher 100%. And we want to maintain all the relationships. We want to maintain the relationship between teacher and parent, teacher and student, and parent and student. We want to maintain all three if we want to come out in a way that all can benefit. Any of you have any ideas how to handle this one? Have I missed something? Have I painted a picture that's not reality in some way? As principal, I think this is the place where my role is to step in. And I talk to the teacher, and I visit the parent. In some situations, I know we don't have principals. It could be the school board chairman. But we need to use Matthew 18, I think, in this one. We need the third party brought in. Because if you don't, there's going to be a continual conflict between teacher, parent, and student. I'm going to throw out a model, but I know we're working with human beings, so you're going to have different levels of success with it. But I think at this point, a third party needs to be brought in. And probably no principals or any, I don't know if there's any principals here or not. I like to communicate with my teachers. I'm at school only 3 days out of the five. But when I'm there, I make a round through the teachers, and I try to have my radar set. Is there something cooking here? Is there something going on? And beginning teachers, I'll say, if you start feeling any tension between you and a parent, let me know. That's my job as principal, to mediate that. Now, I'm going to look at this situation a little bit. Let's say it does come to a meeting and you as a teacher are involved. You're meeting with this parent, you all have had this conflict. Sounds like a meeting you look forward to, doesn't it? These meetings are difficult. I've got some things here just for you to think about if you ever are put in that situation. They can actually be applied to any situation where you have to meet with someone that's been an issue to resolve. I'd also say that this could be an academic discussion because of parents and teachers sometimes struggle with the child that's challenged, you know, what to do. So it could be academic rather than behavior that causes this meeting. But when you have this meeting, what typically happens is the parent and the teacher are preparing for it. And by that I mean each one is trying to get their ammunition ready to prove their side. The teacher's got her ideas, so they've got this going. They come to the meeting primed and cocked. Is that too strong? Could be. They could simply be there ready and not like a cannon ready to go off. But there's going to be tension in the air. Principals, you need to try to remove that tension. Start your meetings light. Talk about the weather. Weather's a great conversation starter, isn't it? I don't know what we'd start a lot of conversations if we didn't have the weather to talk about. But try to remember this. Our goal is to get the emotion down. We have two tense parties here. And so we're trying to get emotions out of it. I recommend that the parents talk first. And you as a teacher, listen. Listen. That's the key. Too often, we are sitting there and we hear them say something that we don't agree with. And we want to straighten it out right there. What's going to happen to our emotions? Are they going to come down? Think about it. Our key is to get the emotions down. So don't give in to that temptation to say, no, that's not how it was. Listen. Just listen. And let the parents' emotions come out. Then the principal should give you time to talk. Give the teacher time to talk. Teachers, don't give in to the temptation to embellish your story to make sure you prove to the parents you're right. We as teachers can be tempted to do that. And what happens when the parent finds that little weakness in our story? That's the handle they use to steer the discussion away from maybe the main issue. So tell it in a way that's simple, to the point, the rule that was broken or whatever. Explain maybe why the rule's in place, the behavior you handed out. And watch your tone of voice. I'm dealing with this workshop mainly as talking to teachers, but parents should do the same thing. Watch your tone of voice. I consider myself to be a fairly easygoing, quiet person. I know you all don't know me. You'll just have to take my word for that. But sometimes I've been in a tense situation, and after I've made a statement, I kind of hear it. I say, man, I said that pretty sharp. We need to be careful about that, because what happens? The emotions start going up. Tone of voice creates emotions. We need to work on our tone of voice. Tone of voice is much more important than what we say, usually. We can say some biting words, definitely. So describe the situation, try to keep it simple. And then it's our hope that we're working with Christians with the same goal of resolving this issue, that all will come out in a way that the benefit of the child can occur. And so, teachers, be open. I would suggest that you talk to co-teachers about the situation and see what they say. They've had experience. They're good resources. Be open to admitting fault. I don't have it in my notes here because I had this developed mainly talking to teachers, but parents have to do the same thing. Parents also have to be willing to admit, you know, I didn't quite understand it that way. I misinterpreted it. I see what you're saying. Both parties coming to this with a spirit of wanting to resolve it, it'd be my hope that that could happen. So if we're there and we take that responsibility, regardless of which one's at fault, with the goal of the child, that's our key. How's the best way to get a hold of this issue? But as I said in the beginning, ultimately it comes back to you as a teacher to go back to the classroom and gain control and relationship. I'll be talking about relationship after lunch. I think it's critical in this. I'm ending up on a little bit of a negative here. And I don't like that because I've had some wonderful parents. I've had some wonderful support. And I think you've felt that too. So I won't let the fact that I'm ending up here on some of a negative situation to cloud the experience you've had with parents. There are parents that are there for us, great, and they make our job easier. The issue of taking 7 to 10 positives to offset a negative can cause us sometimes to take the one parent that is a challenge, and we forget the good ones. Don't forget those good parents. Don't forget them. Ultimately, I just want to empower you teachers to take control of your classroom. I've kind of hit that point. You're in charge of your classroom, and with God's help, you can do it, and you get support of the parents too.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.